Coming back now. Ana Rabu. Who? What else? What else? 2 minutes. Classified as a public entity. I think that's a fundamental, shall I say, question we must address ourselves here. Is it necessarily true that every regulatory authority or entity in South Africa is thus defined as a public entity? My sincere apologies. Where were we? I think, for example, National Energy Regulator, or they are just using this word, National Credit Regulator, National Nuclear Regulator, Railway Regulator, Financial Services Board, Medical Schemes. They are all called public entities. One of the reasons for establishing regulatory authority is that these institutions, by their very nature of performing their functions, may also be called upon to oversee government's own initiatives or activities. In this case, I am thinking, for example, of BioVac. Remember BioVac? The people came here, if you remember. That's one aspect. Therefore, that's the summary, basically, members, is this question: is it necessarily true that a regulatory authority necessarily becomes a public entity? Two, where is the prof? He's not here. He must actually respond to this question. That's your fourth paragraph now, the third paragraph on page two. That says, fourthly, standard provisions related to operations and functions of an entity, such as powers and functions relating to purchasing of property, the cover of fees and the like, should be provided for. In addition, the governance arrangements referred to in Chapter 10 of the Trustees Report should be captured in the legislation. We must identify that one. Then there was a section, I think there it is here, thank you. That is your second paragraph on 30. While defining already many years as a jurist, never properly defined its powers and functions for financial in clearly defined entity, and therefore they are suggesting here that if it's a juristic person, it must thus have a board. That's what this document says here. And then, no provision is made for governance except for entity to report directly. If the entity is functioning effectively as a jurisdiction, that's the point, it must have a governing board. That's their argument. As the chairperson was saying, members, if we therefore want to put all these aspects in the manner in which this submission from Andrew R. Donaldson, Deputy DDG Public Finance, we must actually know that it means this bill is actually, in the way it is actually structured, we'll have to go back to cabinet, we'll have to deal with completely with a new bill. I can guarantee you that. I think that will be a ruling. But as I was saying earlier on, I don't think the persons in Treasury necessarily are correct in the way they are putting it. We must therefore, one, the professor must come in on the fourthly, that is especially those aspects there. We must define this question of public entity juristic persons. And then if we're all clear on those, then we move forward. State law advisor? Or the Mr. Ramachand?
Maybe I can only tell you this, that suggests that the fact that it's a juristic person.
Come again?
I would like to tell you the issue that relates to a juristic person and the board. The suggestion that is being made that while visiting the Jerusalem Temple, and I challenged myself about that is not correct. We have entity. I'm saying, sir, that it is not correct to suggest that a juristic person must have a board. Am I audible enough? We have a number of entities that are juristic persons which do not have boards. The SARS, for instance, one public entity, it doesn't have a board.
It's a juristic person?
Yes. The SASA, it's a juristic person. It doesn't have a board. The CCMA, for instance, it doesn't have a board, but it's a commission. The same could be said of the Competition Commission. It doesn't have a board, but it's a juristic person. Those entities can
SARS?
Be SARS.
Yeah.
SASA is one
SASA.
Of them. CCMA is one of them.
CCMA.
The Competition Commission is one of them. All it means is that those entities can sue and be sued in their own name. But it doesn't follow that they have a board. That's the only thing that I want to clarify.
That's a very good point, Mr. Silo Mashallah. Now, that's the first one. So, it's not necessarily true, therefore. I think those examples. I was just thinking at some point, then the question of public entity, they are confusing the South African has regulatory with those entities with the word regulatory. And therefore make a particular form of competition and then synergize those to say, therefore, ipso facto, this means this. That's what you read in terms of what the treasurer person is actually writing here. Railway regulatory authority, therefore this. What else are they raising? National Energy Regulator, National Credit Regulator, National Nuclear Regulator, and then they mention MCC and the Council for Medical Skills. But you've actually alluded very well in terms of the example that is not necessarily the case. That's the argument we're making here. And then what other point here we're raising? Public entity. So therefore it may not be correct therefore to say that the South African health product regulatory authority must therefore be defined as a public entity. In our case, just as the MCC, we defined it as a juristic person. Am I right? That in our case here, the juristic person defined here is the regulator there. In this case, the authority. We're defining not as a public entity, but as a juristic person, it can be sued, it can sue. Now, the only section remaining is a pity the prof. Oh, here he is, the prof is here. Thank you very much. I didn't see you coming in. Will be paragraph 3, Prof. Standard provisions relating to operations and functions of an entity such as powers and functions related to purchasing. But those purchases are defined in the PFMA. Because all the assets, etc., is defined there. It's defined already here. The only aspect is this chapter 10 of the TAF team that should be captured in the legislation. And that's of this understanding. Under the governance arrangement. Prof.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think that you are right. As an agency, it does have capacity, or it is a juristic person, and it is able to retain revenue. So I think that's not a problem. The second thing is that globally, the regulatory authorities are all either in government, and there are very few that are agencies. That's it. The UK is a pseudo agency. Canada is in government. Singapore, Malaysia in government. Australia is an agency. But I think that, and they function as being juristic persons and also function in retaining revenue. So there's no problem with it being in that manner. And this was discussed extensively within the ministerial task team. And Mark Brecher was one of the members of the task team. And after many months of debate, we came up with the consensus decision that it should be put forward as being an agency, a juristic body, and retain revenue, and this agency be within the Department of Health, and that the CEO report to the minister and be subject to the PFMA. And that was the decision of the task team. So it's in line with the book.
So that section you raised is about chapter 10. That in his own understanding, you'll see. Do you have a letter of this? No, come together. Nice, beautiful. Yes. That's the third paragraph from above, the last sentence, chapter 10. You want to see this?
I think that the governance arrangements that have been spelled out are in line with the amendment of the bill as well, because what was said in the task team is that there would be the CEO, there would be an executive. The executive would be composed of the chairs of the different components or units within the regulatory authority, and that those units would be able to consult with a panel of experts or experts if and when necessary, but that the work would be done under the aegis of the regulatory authority. And I think the DG has spelled that out in detail, so I'm not going to go into it. And that the principles of governance, we listed the principles of governance there, and none of them are in conflict with the tenets of the amendment. But I think the details of the structure and of the organogram, my understanding is that is process and operational, and it will come into the regulations rather than coming into the legislation, which should be enabling, and that would then come at that level. Otherwise, if you put it into the legislation, it means every time you want to change one post, you'd have to come back to Parliament, and that will impede the functions of the regulatory authority.
That's it. Then we're moving forward. I think all the related matters from this letter have been clarified. Members, we now go to... Oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't see you.
Sorry, Chair. Yes, I hear all of what Professor Green-Thompson has said, but that was my amendment, and I would just like to move that again, that we put into the legislation... not stupid detail that you have to come back to the committee every time you change, but just a suggestion of an organogram that there's something between the heads of the committee, the CEO and the minister, and that was the executive committee. So if we can just put that into the legislation, that's a compromise between all these different suggestions. This letter, the board suggestion, the complaints of these people who said there's not enough structure. That would be a compromise to say, the heads of the various committees should sit on an executive committee which must meet from time to time, and that would give us something that at least has a degree of transparency, that one group can see what the other's doing, they integrate and coordinate their work. And I do think, if it's a good idea, that we should leave it to regulation. If Prof thinks it's a good idea, and we all think it's a good idea, why can't we just put that into the legislation? It does give a bit of an idea of an organogram, at least as an executive committee. And that executive committee should review policy or approve policy and meet from time to time. Wouldn't that be a compromise? It's what Prof says, and it's what this chapter 10 calls for. This is what we have discussed. It's a compromise, but it's something. A bit easier. It's in the original bill under it's 9, appointment of page 267. I don't know if you've got the original bill in that way. But it says appointment of executive committee and other committees in the original principal act here. Just talked about an executive committee. We have to change that a bit. Just say an executive committee shall be created comprising the heads of other committees, and it must meet from time to time to formulate policy of the authority and to review policy. To formulate and review policy of the authority. Perhaps the DG would comment if he thinks that's a bad or a good idea. I know he said during our tea break that that means you've got an employment contract and you've got to be told to meet, but you've got to meet anyway. You've just got to meet with other members who are heads of their committee.
But I'm just trying to look at your proposal here. I don't see any of those things.
Yeah, well, it is an executive committee which works subject to the direction of the council, but it does exercise powers and functions of the council. So we're doing away with the council. We're saying just have your authority. Your authority is going to appoint heads of committees, and Cross says that he did propose in Chapter 10 that those heads of committees would form part of an executive committee. So now we're just putting that into the bill.
Is it not sufficient to say committees? Because if you say heads of committees, you're actually going to now... Because those committees are going to change from time to time. The common denominator will be committees.
We want the heads of those committees to sit as an executive body.
Actually, that will be actually very dangerous.
Policy review.
Why don't you leave that to regulation?
Yeah, but it's at least something.
You see, it's...
You agree with me, but let's say so.
Prof. Helen, please.
Can I clarify what I said, Chair? It's not heads of committees. It's heads of units or components within the regulatory authority. It's a difference. Because you have the CEO. Then in the banagram, you would have a Office of Business Administration and Transformation. You'd have an HR. You'd have a CFO. And then you would have components. And those components, the heads of those components, will then form the executive committee. The executive committee under the CEO. It's not committee structure heads. It's not like that. If they should then want to source expert or expert panels, then they can do that if and when necessary. But the work is done by the regulatory authority, and each component will have a head, and that those heads, together with the CEO, will form the executive committee. It's not committee heads that are forming the executive committee.
Gigi? Oh, it's me.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I want to appeal to Honorable Rabinowitz to see the logic differently. The logic here is that we are saying that we are establishing an authority. We shall, or an agency for, we shall be led by a CEO. We also say the structure of that and the human resource policy of that agency shall be determined by the Minister for Public Service, after consultation with the Minister for Public Service. That's in Section 9, which is a normal thing about how a department of government, for example, which is what, let's call this a department. Now we're calling it an agent. Well, how many posts it will have, how many units, how many sections, and who's going to head each unit at what level, the minister shall determine that after the consultation with the Minister for Public Service and Administration. Once you've established that, that's a structural arrangement which must execute managerial tasks of different nature. There can be financial management, there can be human resource management, there can be also policies relating to how the tasks assigned by this bill are going to be executed. In relation to the tasks assigned to this bill, we say this authority, which would have been established, shall publish rules for how it's going to operate in terms of that. If you say, now, such an authority, in other words, the Department of Health, shall hold, the heads of every branch of the Department of Health shall hold 5-minute meetings a year. What you're doing by, because this is not a committee that's only convened occasionally, it's people who are operationally there full time, and therefore are doing all sorts of things that are actually meant to do this. Now, if you say they shall meet 4 times a year, in other words, you're beginning to actually micromanage how a management must work. And if that management, effectively, the CEO feels that 4 of the heads of this unit must be on the ground doing something else, then by law, they shouldn't be doing that, because we have actually said they must be meeting every month, once a month, even if they are somewhere overseas, fulfilling the obligations of this act. But they must come back and meet in order to fulfill once a month. That's micromanagement by law. We're actually managing an entity by law, saying that it shall actually work this way, which we can do with the council, because it's people who do other things, we say they must come every month. But here, the entity itself, in how it actually operationalizes its work, I don't think we can prescribe that in law, because then we are saying that they will be in breach of law if they can't be in that meeting. That's what we are saying. If they can't be in a meeting which determines policy and it must be done every month or periodically, whatever that periodical means, then they are in breach of the law. In spite of the fact that actually they are fulfilling the obligations of this act, in that they are trying to ensure that certain people who are doing research on their behalf are supposed to be doing that research, or they are attending conferences that are actually sharpening their... But they, as heads, they have to be all the time meeting once a month. Now, we have to also then define, what do we mean by a meeting? Because when you say they must meet once a month, do you mean all of them? Or at least if there are 3 or 4 of them, when there are 7, then that's a meeting. We must then say so in law. And we must say, if they are taking meeting there, what are they doing? How do they arrive at those decisions? Do they arrive at by consensus or majority? It must be in law. Once you actually try to say you are regulating the executive to form an executive, then you have to actually say what, like in any other regulation of a meeting, to say these are the structural arrangements of that meeting, this is the decision-making process. And that's managing a management. It's not a committee. These are people who are full-time managers of an entity. We're now saying in law we must tell them how they are going to manage this entity by meeting once, by agreeing, by consensus, by doing this. That's not what you do in law. So conceptually the logic is different. We're thinking of a logic of boards and committees, and we're imposing it in a management structure. This is a managerial approach and a managerial structure. That's all I would like to say.
Thank you very much. Members, I really want to plead for progress now. I think that's the section we've dealt with in the beginning. Suitable qualified staff, the public service processes, and then the committees that are there. Let's go to 33. Analysts, pharmacologists, engineers, and pathologists. The CEO may grant such authority to such analysts, pharmacologists, engineers, and pathologists, or any other appropriate qualified person as he may consider necessary for the proper enforcement of this act. Comment? Thank you very much. Honorable Mashiach.
Thank you, Chairperson. To me, it still leaves out the it just says engineers, and medical devices deals with technologies and other specialists. How have you accommodated them? Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Kalyan.
It was to include the word technician or medical technician. And then analysts, we are talking of what analysts here?
Come again?
The term analyst refers to what category of analyst?
Within whatever people analyzing any clinical issues or whatever issues within the industry. So maybe we say analyst, pharmacologist, engineers, what other words do we use?
Technicians.
Medical technicians or just technicians, ne? How's that one? Instead of just, because there will be engineers and technicians. There's a proposal, Honorable Mashiro, supported by Kalyan.
Chair, I think there's no problem, but how we try to capture that, because then somebody else is going to talk another group, was to say, or any other appropriately qualified person as they may consider necessary. So that covers any others, because we only have to list a whole range of other people.
Honorable Mashiro?
Then the word persons suitable, or should it be specialists or what? I'm just asking.
Qualified persons. Thank you very much. Honorable Manana? Covered? Honorable Tetebe?
Well, the point I'm raising...
Which one?
No, the general point that you raised with regard to gender neutrality.
Where?
Yeah, it consistently talks of the he. So, anyway, I'm just saying to remind us that we will always be gender sensitive.
Thank you very much. He or she will pass just S/E. Then the drafters will sort it out. Now 34 members. 34, section 28 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution in sub 1, subsection 1A of for paragraph 1, Roman 1, or the following sub paragraph 1. Any place, I'm using 45, page 45, ne? Any place or premises from which a person authorized under this act to compound and dispense medicine or certain substances, handles products, medical devices or IVD, or from which the holder of a license is contemplated in 22C1B, conducted business, or by substitution of one for paragraph B and C of the following paragraph, respectively B, inspect any product, medical device, or IVD, or any book, record, or document found in or upon the premises, place, vehicle, vessel, or vehicle, or aircraft contemplated in Roman 1, paragraph 1A. C, seize any such product, medical device, product, comma, medical device, or IVD, any book, record, or document found in or such upon premises, vehicles, place, vehicle, vessel, aircraft appearing to afford evidence of a contravention of any provision of this act, and then by the addition of subsection 1 of the following paragraph, take so many samples of any such product, medical device, or IVD as he or she may consider necessary for the purpose of testing, examination, or analysis in terms of the provision of this act, by the substitution for subsection 2 of the following subsection 2A, any sample taken in terms of paragraph D of subsection 1 shall 1 be taken in accordance with the prescribed methods and in the presence of the person who is in charge of such product, medical device, or IVD, or if there is no such person, or if he or she is absent for any reason in the presence of any other witness, forthwith be packed and sealed and suitably labeled or marked in such a manner as its nature may permit, and then be transmitted to an analyst, pharmacologist, technician, or pathologist, together with a certificate in the prescribed form signed by by such inspector. A copy of the aforesaid certificate shall be handed or transmitted by registered post to the owner or seller of such product, medical device, or IVD, or his or her agent, by the substitution of four of the following substitutes. The owner of the product, medical device, from which the sample was taken, may claim from the authority an amount equal to the market value thereof. That's your 34, honorable members. Comment? Honorable?
It's a short one, Chair. I just wondered why 34A, small 1,
has 34A,
1. That's on page 45.
Yeah.
Why have they left out?
Where are you reading, madam?
One. Any place or premises from which a
person... I can't hear.
It's clause 34, page 45. It's A, and it's little one. Roman figure one. And that, in that sentence or that chapter, the one thing that's been left out is the person who holds a certificate of registration of a medicine. And I can't understand why that's left out. I'm proposing that it's put back. It's in the principal act.
Medical devices or articles from which the holder of a license is contemplated in 22C1B conducts a business. Where are you?
If you look at the principal act, it also has one double C. It includes in this the holder of a certificate of registration of a medicine. And that's been left out in page 45, clause 34, A, subsection little Roman 1. It says nothing about a person who holds a certificate of registration of a medicine. There may be a reason for it. I'm not
sure. Can you just read the section so that we really follow you? Do you understand it?
It reads here, any place... Oh, sorry, 34, section 28 of the principal act.
Any place or premises from which a person
authorized under this act to compound and dispense medicines or scheduled substances, handled products, medical devices, or IVDs, or from which the holder of a license as contract executive conducts the business. Now, you say here authorized under this act to compound and dispense medicines. Does that mean that their products are registered? Because they have cut out hold certificate of registration of a medicine. Those words have been cut out from the principal.
Okay, not fine.
And I want to know if there's a substitute in the sentence for that. Section 20.
Are we following here?
A, Roman 1, little C, double C.
To compound or authorize under this act to compound and dispense medicine. Are you following him, DG?
Yes.
Hello, that's my fellow. How would you read it so that we all follow?
Of the
Are we all together, Major? Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Rabinovich. Two and... Yes, they remain. Any other comment? Any other comment? What about, you remember that question that was raised by Honorable Kalyan on technician? But now on page 46, E3, we have now put technician. Remember, Honorable Kalyan, that question you were raising? Oh, Honorable Mashiko? Sorry? Do you remember that section? Now here it states analyst, pharmacologist, technician, underlined, doesn't put engineer. Do you see that?
Yes.
So we'll have to put engineer, technician. It will mean even the heading must therefore be changed to comply with the earlier point raised. Yes. Thank you very much. Where were we? That's your page 44. That's your page 44, and therefore it will mean here also you put engineer. That deals with what? Deals with 34, we come to 35. Are we all together? Section 29 of the Visual Act is hereby amended, 35. By the substitution of paragraph E of the following paragraph E, contravenes or fails to comply with any condition imposed under 15.6. By the substitution in paragraph H for the words preceding subparagraph Roman 1 of the following words, makes any false or misleading statement in connection with any product, medical device, or IVD, and by the substitution for subparagraph 1 of the following paragraph, sells any product upon the container for which a false or a misleading statement in connection with the contents written thereof. That's your 35 comment. Agreed to, thank you. 36. By the substitution of the following subsection, the court convicting any person of an offense under this act, upon the application of the prosecutor, declare any product, medical device, or IVD in respect in which the offense has been committed to be forfeited to the state, and by the substitution of the subsection 3 of the following subsection, any product, medical device, or IVD forfeited under this act shall be destroyed or otherwise dealt with as the CEO may direct. Comment? Honorable Duterte.
Any perhaps reason why we then limit such forfeiture to the product, medical device, or IVD, etc., and not go as far as the previous sections where we, there's reference to the aircraft and stuff like that? I just want to understand.
Don't use the shorthand.
I beg your pardon?
Don't use shorthand so that the chair will follow you. That may not never understand.
Oh, okay, I'm saying in the previous clauses where, for example, product, medical device, or IVD, those went together with the aircraft and whatever else, other things, equipment or whatever. That, let me just go back there. I'm just saying, any reason why we limit ourselves only to the three, or is it four, with regard to the possible forfeiture of these to the state? Because in the previous one, I don't know if members remember that one. There's a long list of vessel, aircraft, vehicle, and stuff like that on page 45. C. Okay, can you see that? Clause 34 of the Word version. Is any such product, medical device, IVD, books, da-da-da-da. Can you see that? 45. Amendments of Section 28 of the Principal Act. If you go down, seizure of goods or products, it gives us a long list there. It adds books, records, or documents, da-da-da-da. Now, any reason why in this particular instance, we limit ourselves only to the four, three, and not those. Is my question clear, Chief?
Yeah, no, you see the problem you may not be following is that the earlier one was dealing with the... Come again? Yeah, that was the inspectorate and searches and seizures, no? And this one is actually dealing now with the actual offences. It's no longer dealing, it's now hosted that particular process. It now says that you have now, it's a penalty is now rather being given. And therefore these are the convictions that will actually be getting. It's no longer, the other was an act on the searches and whatever.
Chair, if you can help also.
Oh, did you say you?
If the honourable member reads the clause that he's referring to, it's not talking about the seizure of all those things. It's talking about the seizure of such product, medical devices or IVDs, books and records or documents, which relate to those things. The rest of the things is where these could be found. They could be found in an aircraft, on the premises or in an aircraft or in a car, etc., etc. So you are not seizing those things, the cars and so on. You are only seizing the medical devices, the IVDs, or the books and records that are related to those matters. So to be consistent with that, but to assist the honourable member also, the forfeiture unit may come back and say, now we want to seize the aircraft and so on, if they can prove that those are proceeds of fraudulent and criminal behavior. So they would have the power to seize. This would have the power to seize the thing that they are related to, which is medicine, medical devices, or devices. So that's the idea.
Thank you very much. 37, Section 37 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution in subsection 1 for the paragraph 3 of the following paragraph. Any quantity of product, medical device, or IVD in or upon any premises, place, vehicle, vessel, or aircraft at the time a sample thereof is taken pursuant to the provisions of this Act shall, unless the contrary is proved, be deemed to possess the same properties as such sample. And B, by the substitution of paragraph D of the following paragraph D, any statement or entry contained in any book, record, or document kept by any owner of a product, medical device, or IVD, or by the manager, agent, or employee of such owner, or found upon in any of the in any premises occupied by or any vehicle used in the business of such owner shall be admissible in evidence against him or her as an admission of the, you see that you change that him or her, as an admission of the facts set forth in that statement or entry unless evidence to the contrary which raises a reasonable doubt shows that that statement or entry was not made by such owner or by any manager, agent, or employee of such owner in the course of his or her work as manager or in the course of his or her
agency or of employment, comment. Come again, I couldn't follow.
So if you look at the, on page 49.
Page 49, yeah.
B, and paragraph D.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle, we're taking out the word, it is proved.
Taking out the word?
It is proved. Do you see that? It's in bold and it's got brackets around it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is quite definite. I mean, you've got to prove that the person didn't make the entry. And we're replacing that with evidence to the contrary, which raises a reasonable doubt, shows that the person...
Okay.
I just want to know why that changed.
Following Dobby. Can you follow? Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honorable Potter. It is proved to the contrary, unless evidence to the contrary. What's the difference?
Yeah, I think the other substantiate what proof means. It unpacks it. It says proof means providing evidence to the contrary, which raises a reasonable doubt. That's what it means, really, rather than say proof, because the onus of proof may be in terms of different scales. So this one is the reasonable doubt proof issue. I think that's how I'm reading it. So in other words, they're correcting that notion that it's simply proof, which could actually be interpreted in any way as the adequacy depends, to say we want to apply the principle of reasonable doubt here in this particular case. And so there must be, it raises some reasonable doubt.
Yeah. Honorable Teacher Abe?
Sorry, I haven't seen the section that the DG refers to.
That's
but
page 49.
I mean the where proof is defined. Where he's trying to. Where he's trying to further.
He says, if you say it is proof, there are levels of proof. But if you say evidence to the contrary, there must be contrary evidence to the evidence currently existing.
Yeah, okay. I don't want to believe that this is just a semantic exercise. Between evidence beyond reasonable doubt and evidence on the balance of probabilities, which are we staying with here, the former or the latter? Because that's what I want to understand in relation to that. I think prompted by the question by Honorable Waters.
I'm going to give to the State Advisor as soon as she is actually ready to respond to this question, so that we can really move forward on this. Honorable Rabinovich.
I hope this time I'm going to simplify the matter. I think it's important that we make it easier to use evidence that may incriminate people rather than letting them withhold evidence that may show that they have done things that are difficult to prove. So I think this is a good idea. If we look at what we're doing, we're enabling records or statements or things that people may want to hide because they may say that. You can't prove that
evidence to the contrary, which raises a reasonable doubt, shows that the statement of entry was not made by such owner.
So I agree that
State
we make it a lucid case. Let's just leave it as it is. Thank you.
State law advisor.
Thank you, Chair. As the teacher said, actually, it was the. I'm taking the whole issue because it looked quite a bit complicated. We know that the legislation must be clear, not like for anybody. Let's think beyond the fact that we are the reading of lawyers, so it's simplifying it for everybody in that sense. And in the question by Honorable Member Dittel, it's not the first one, it is the reason the Lord has not on a balance of probabilities. No. It is not on a balance of probabilities. It is beyond the reasonable doubt, as it is stated here. So it is like clear. So it was a way real, there's no hidden meaning. It's a way of simplifying it. Because proof is really not defined anywhere, even in the principal.
Thank you very much, Honorable Captain Novice. Thank you very much, State Law Advisor. We're moving with a good pace. We are now on 38. That's the following subsection for Section 33A of the Principal Act, Funds of Authority. Are we all together? Page 50, members. The funds of the authority shall consist of A, state funds received through the Department of Health, B, fees raised and interest on overdue fees, C, money accruing to the authority from any other source. 2A, the authority may accept money or other goods donated or bequeathed to the authority, provided no condition is attached to such donation or bequest. B, details of any such donations or bequests shall be specified in the relevant annual report of the authority. The authority shall utilize its funds for the defrayal of expenses incurred by the authority in the performance of its functions under this Act. The authority shall open an account with the bank as defined in Section 1 of the Banks Act 1990, F94 of 1990, and shall deposit in that account all money referred to in Section 1. The authority shall keep full and proper records of all money received or expended, or its assets and liabilities, and of its financial transactions. The record and financial statements referred to in subsection 5, shall be audited by the Auditor General. The authority may invest money which is deposited in terms of Section 4, subsection 4, and which is not required for immediate use in any manner as it may deem fit. Any money which at the close of the authority's financial year stands to the credit of the authority in the account referred to in 4, and money which has been invested in terms of 7, shall be carried forward to the next financial year as credit in the account of the authority. Comment, Honorable Dichebe.
Chairperson, just to find out from the DG and his team, Biotechnology Company X may very well decide that we are going to donate 800 million rand to the authority, for example. And it becomes quite a public affair, and they announce no strings attached. But there also is a concept called Tanztafal. There ain't no such thing as free lunch. Right? Now, I want to understand whether, in fact, we are being realistic when we say such donation will be accepted provided there are no strings attached. Now, in their actual conduct, human persons are likely to be unduly influenced, even if those that bequeath to them whatever largesse gifts may have not publicly stated that. This we are doing with the following strings attached. I would be comfortable, Chairperson, for example, if the Assets for Future Unit, as we know in the National Revenue Fund, there is this item called CARA, Criminal Assets Recovery Account. In the process of attaching property or wealth that's ill-gotten as a result of these activities and so forth, and they say, we want to then pay this, hand this over back to the authority and so forth, I would understand. But if it's other sources and so forth, I'm not so sure. Don't we want to perhaps limit it to those kinds of instances rather than later on be confronted with a controversy of as to whether the authority was unduly influenced when it received so much from so and so and so forth? I'm just thinking about that, Chair. Thanks.
Did you?
Chair, some of these things have to be looked in balance. The industry, for example, can agree that, or sections of the industry, that they feel it is in their interest to ensure that they bequeath IT capacity to this authority, because at this stage the authority doesn't have enough funds to improve their capacity, and the industry feels they want to actually bequeath that. We shouldn't prohibit that by law at the same time, to say therefore they shouldn't receive any gifts from the industry as an authority. Individuals, yes, we can restrict. But I mean the authority here in its capacity, and that's I think is a critical issue, because you must allow, and in fact that's what industry actually always says it would like to assist with. I think I'm choosing that as an example. But that is why also secondly, that this is a May clause which allows the authority to weigh all those issues that you're actually suggesting. So it's difficult to strike a balance. One understands that, but also those things are declared, there's a public kind of sense. So if one company, for argument's sake, bequeaths certain things that will favor that company in terms of how the authority operates, everybody will know and can object to through the processes of number 15. To say, look, this is based on this and not on science or efficiency, effectiveness, and so on. So I suppose those things have to be balanced in this way. That's why we open it, but also put a bit of discretion, but we don't really close it, because if you do, then somehow, sometimes the industry may want to assist the authority in one way or the other to actually get the authority to function a little bit better. Because it's in the interest of the industry for them to do so.
Thank you very much, Honorable Duterte. I would have thought also this refers to FDA or EU or, you know, principally those are the bodies that may fail to capacitate South African drug registration authority. These are the donations they will actually come, because the mutuality and complementarity thereafter in terms of whatever they need. Principally, that would be, but everything must be declared. If the EU or the FDA or whatever, Australian, whatever, people donate such money, they must be recorded in a particular way. Then, as you are saying, they must all be these governance and mechanisms that are there, including the report of the AG. Honorable Rabinovitz.
We could put a small amendment there which says to improve its functioning, or to improve the function, the operational capacity of the authority.
The problem, if you do that, you're going to limit what that money will be used for.
Well, it will make it complete.
It may actually be to put more staff, not in terms of functioning or any other. Let's not if you do that now, you're actually going to create further problems for yourself, because you're prescribing now how money is actually going to be dispersed. Thank you very much. We now, where are we, Honorable Tichebe? Yeah? Are we going to 59? No. On 51 now. Thank you very much. I'm awaking now. I just want everybody to be attentive, but since the district congress, all our members are tired, I wanted them to jump. Agreed. Thank you very much, Honorable Manana. 39. Section 34A of the Principality hereby amended by the addition of the following subsection: the CEO may in writing authorize any staff member of the authority
to exercise or perform in general or in particular case or in cases of a particular nature any power, duty, or function conferred to or conferred or imposed by the CEO in charge of this act. I think that's very clear. It's delegation, basically. Thank you very much. We are now on 40. We are moving. We may finish today. We finish at 6. I'm so sorry. I'm not there. I just want to wake up everybody. Section 35 of the Principal Act is hereby amended. A, by the substitution of one of the preceding paragraph 1 of the following words, the minister may, in consultation with the authority, make regulations. B, prescribing the particulars which shall be published in the Gazette in respect of any application for registration referred to in subsection in section 1510. By the substitution in 15.1 for paragraph 8 of the following paragraph relating to the responsibilities of both medical devices and IVT establishments and users of medical devices and IVTs in regular use, training, maintenance, calibration, post-marketing, surveillance, sterilization, disinfection, recall, decomposition, decommissioning, or decontamination of medical devices and IVTs. By the substitution for Roman 16, or what is this? Of the following paragraph, prescribing the fee to be paid by the authority in the respect of an application for registration and in respect of the registration of a product medical device at a fee to be paid annually to the authority in respect of the retention of the certification or the registration of a product, IVT, or medical device at the date on which the annual fee shall be made, shall be paid. By the substitution in 1 for paragraph 18 of the following paragraph relating to appeals against decisions of the Director General or the authority relating to the scientific, pharmaceutical, clinical, technical, and other skills required by the members of the staff of the authority evaluate the quality, efficacy, and safety of the product, medical device, and IVD. By the insertion of paragraph 19 of the following paragraph, the existing paragraph and becoming paragraph respectively. So, relating to the product medical device or IVD in respect of matters contemplated in paragraph 1 and including paragraph and paragraphs relating to control of product medical devices in general, relating to licensing for possessing or certain product medical device or IVD. HB. Any regulation, etc., for which the minister is, after consultation with the authority, of the opinion that the public interest requires it to be made without delay. Regulation made under 111 may prescribe that any product, medical device or IVD, or any component thereof, shall comply with the requirements set out in any publication which, in the opinion of the authorities, generally recognized as authoritative. Regulations may be made under this section in respect of particular product, medical device or IVD, or classes or categories, in respect thereof, other than particular classes or categories of products, medical device or IVDs, and differences that will be made in respect of different products, medical device or IVDs, or different classes or categories of products, medical device, notwithstanding the provision of section 1, the minister may, if he or she deems it to be in the public interest, after consultation with the authority, make regulation relating to any matter referred to in one, or to amend or appeal any regulation made in terms of that section. Comment, members, you can see.
Chair, may I beg your indulgence?
Yes, sir.
Chair, we could have...
Are we following this?
Yeah. Chair, we could have done this, but we needed first to have the authority of the committee. If members recall that the committee wanted the authority to determine rules, and we put a clause that had to do with rules for the time frames for the consideration of applications, that's on page 18 of the big document. Many of the rules, the regulations that are listed under this section could actually be transferred to the authority for them to become the rules, such as, for example, prescribing the forms which shall be used for any application for registration. If you're going to have only time frames, you have to have the whole process of registration prescribed in those rules. So we would have wanted to separate those things that relate to largely that clause and put it under that clause. The authority shall, by way of rules, determine, one, the forms which shall be used for any application, I'm just giving an example, which shall be furnished with any such application, and so on and so on, including the time frames. That would be separate from some of the regulations that require ministerial intervention. So that's what we are suggesting, Chair, that the committee may consider mandating, because it would actually read and be much more functional. If you say the authority shall, by way of rules, determine the time frames for the consideration of applications, then it makes sense to actually continue to say, including how those applications must be submitted to the authority, and what should they have in terms of the content and all those things, the particulars that need to be furnished. That's not something that should be made in terms of regulations made by the minister. So that's what I'm suggesting, Chair. And there are many other sub-clauses like that would relate to that activity of registration of medicines, which in fact we should just be expanding on in terms of clause 11 on page 18. If you are with me, Chair.
Yes, I'm with you. There's a proposal, members.
Yes, page 18 of the big document. If you read the last clause, Honourable Rabinovitz, it was an attempted saying. I think the committee was concerned that they wanted to respond to this issue of time frames, and we ended up, there was an agreement that the authority shall, by way of rules, determine the time frames for the consideration of applications. Now, what I'm suggesting is, instead of limiting it only to time frames, we take everything that has to do with registration and say the authority shall by way of rules determine, for example, and I've taken sub item 2, which is the forms.
No.
On page 18 of the, I'm saying the authority shall by way of rules determine, and I was making an example in terms of the amendment that we've just been reading now. That it's an amendment coming from a whole range of things that the minister is supposed to make regulations on, one of which, as an example, is on prescribing the forms which shall be used for any application for registration. Now, I'm saying such a thing would be part of the application process, so it would rather be part of the rules that the authority makes, etc., etc. And then we can list many other things like that. So I'm suggesting that if we are authorized to do that, we could then select those things that are related to the registration process and put them under that clause 11, so that the clause 11 would read like the authority shall, by way of rules, determine all the issues that have to do with registration, like forms of how you register and so on, including time frames.
a big debate about this in the past, taking things that were in regulations and putting them into rules. And it's getting, the control that the public has over it gets weaker and weaker. And the access to that information gets narrower and narrower. So I wouldn't be one of the members of the committee that would say go ahead and just put it all into rules. If currently it's proposed that it should be in regulations, I suggest that we keep it in regulations.
That's okay, Honourable Gitebe, I hope we understood what the DG was saying. I'll come back.
I'm on clause 40. I don't know if we've dispensed with this one.
No.
Sorry. Yeah, I want to speak on that. Chair?
DG was trying in simpler terms to say it may seem that perhaps this clause 40 could be simplified in an itemized fashion. Clause 40 dealing with registration, regulations, all of them, then regulation dealing with registration, timelines, etc., regulation dealing with the forms, and then etc., etc. That's what he was actually suggesting, that we can simply simplify clause 40 further. And then we present it to ourselves. She's still allowed to finish there. Am I right, DG?
You are very, very correct, Chair. Except I just want to say to Honorable Rabinovich, there's nothing stopping this committee from asking for those rules to be published for public comment for before they are finalized. There's nothing stopping the committee. So the status of regulations and rules is not an issue, because there will still be rules of that committee. What it then avoids is that, again, you're asking for a ministerial prescription of the processes that perhaps the authority may feel and the parties may feel are not working, because the way you've done this form has a gap here and a gap there. So let's do it differently. So it's an enabler rather than any aberration, as the Honorable Rabinovich is trying to make it.
Let's give it a shot, and then we'll deal with it when it comes back next week.
I'm getting the view of people who want access to the information to be able to fight with the department when things are not going right. If you say the rules are as accessible as the regulations, they tell me they're not. So I'm only speaking on behalf of interested parties. So we can discuss it next week. Perhaps we'll go back to the people who are affected.
Carry on.
Thank you, Chairperson. Once again, I'm going to refer to...
Can we understand the... Okay.
Because I think these rules and regulations will still stick to those, because we don't want them to come to us and we find that with mixed medicines and devices and in where they are not supposed to be mixed. Because as I originally said, as we continue going on, we read so many things that we sometimes don't know whether this one means medicine product, medicine device. We request that it becomes clear. When we talk about medicine, it must be strictly medicine. When we talk about medicine products, medical devices, and IVDs, it be like that. Because when it comes to regulations, it's all of them. And at one stage or another, thorough indulgence is needed, so that we shouldn't be mixing these medicines and medical devices. We are supposed to have medicines alone and not medical devices. Thank you.
Honorable Kalyan? Well covered. Thank you very much, DG.
Chair, I understand what the DG is saying. If we have it in rules, then there's more flexibility in case the procedure is cumbersome and the forms aren't easy flowing or aren't easily filled in. So I understand that. But let's say, for example, the time frame, let's say 6 months to register medicine, and they found they're not reaching that target. Can they then instead of trying to improve the performance of the new authority, to then just simply change through the rules the time frame to register medicines. Yeah, that's what I'm concerned about there. Yeah. And just
It's in this situation that one doesn't understand when one is winning or losing. I thought Honourable Waters is really not so happy with the minister being involved, and it was as a result of this that we said the authority should determine the rules, including time frames, and that has already been agreed upon. There was no controversy about that. What I was suggesting was that the committee may say to Honourable Rubinovich that such rules may be published before finalization for public comment and scrutiny and so on, before finalization. Now, that would make it impossible for the committee to simply change the authority, because then whenever they change it, that change would have to go public first. And so you make the role players responsible for being the referees in that regard. So that would have taken care of what Honourable Rabinovich are saying. That's the route you can, if you are concerned about the effectiveness of that, that they could sit down and just change the rules, rather than give that authority to the minister, who in any case will rely on that authority to say, what rules do you want me to make for you, because I don't know this thing, you know. So that's the idea. Sure.
We have to say, put in the amendment. Can we write in that amendment, please? Good, then we're all one.
Are we all clear now, DG? We'll come back. You can let a clear proposal. Thank you very much. We go to 40 what? We go to 41. 41. Exclusion of any product medical device or for operation of the minister may, on the recommendation of the authority, by notice in the gazette, exclude, subject to conditions, as she may determine, any product device or medical device or IVD for operation of any or all of its head, or may, in the life of amend or withdraw, notwithstanding, one, the exclusion of any product from operation of Section 22, this shall be on the recommendation of the pricing committee. You recall the section that was the comments from the NAPW. And in fact, we even said, if you want to come here, what are we saying here? Remember that comment there? Oh, thank you.
A concern in the principal act.
What's a concern?
Well, let me read this. In the principal act, it's I've lost my answer. It says, I can't find it, but it says, if I remember, that the, thank you very much, the minister may, on the unanimous recommendation of members present at any meeting of the council, carries on by notice, right? Thank you. Thank you very much. Now we're saying that the CEO can recommend, and the CEO is one individual, where before the meeting of the council, which is obviously more than one person, would make these recommendations for exclusion. So I'm just saying, we're now giving that whole authority to one particular individual, as opposed to...
Which one is in the principal act?
36.
317, that's regulations already. Okay.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. And what are we on? Sorry. Aren't you on, we're on section 36.
What are we saying here? We are on 441, the following section. 41 is hereby amended, thereby secures the section 36 of the Principal Act. The minister may, Where is it now? You recall this section, my member. Exclusion of any product, medical device, or IVD from operation of act. I think that's the heading now that is being put. The minister may, on the recommendation of the authority, by notice in the Gazette, exclude subject to such conditions as he or she may determine any product, medical device, or IVD from the operation of any or all of the provisions of this Act, and may in like manner amend or withdraw such notice. Notwithstanding, one, the exclusion of any product from the operation of G shall be on the recommendation of the pricing committee. What's the problem? Are we all together, members? Oh, thank you very much, Rabinovich.
Thank you, Chair. You, point two is included on the request about pricing.
About?
Let's leave out clause two for the meantime and just look at clause one, which is the exclusion by notice in Gazette of any product, medical device, etc. I want to support Honourable Waters in what he said. This relates to the structure of the whole body. Here we just have an authority with no checks on her except her accountability to the minister. And that authority, be it a she or a he, that's the CEO really, can decide that she wants to exclude any product, any device from this procedure in this Act and ask the minister's approval, and the minister allows the withdrawal of that product. They withdraw any product from the operation of any or all of the provisions of this Act and may in like manner amend or withdraw any such notice. It's like, it makes me wonder why we're putting all this legislation in. If one person, with the approval of the minister, who's appointed by the minister, can do whatever he or she likes. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you.
Chair, I think we must continue to, perhaps it might be for the last time now. This authority, like any authority in the country, functions in terms of the Constitution and the rules of administrative justice. So, it doesn't say the CEO, it says the authority as a body can actually ask the minister to do this, and the minister on the advice of the authority. The authority obviously would have to have very good reasons why it would do that. Otherwise, the person who's the applicant or affected would say, what is the sound basis for A, B, and C? Of what you are recommending. We should actually work on the trust that the authority would therefore ensure that one of the committees that it must establish would have looked at the matter and suggested that the authority makes a recommendation. No individual who is acting in an office acts as an individual, whatsoever. Even a minister cannot just wake up and say, as a minister, decree. There are all sorts of checks and balances. If they did that, you would be there, as Honorable Killian, to say, you are the checks and balances. So I would say no individual who is in a public office can actually act that way. So I would appeal that we take the authority as an authority, not simply as the CEO who wakes up one day to say, I don't like the product from that company, therefore, as I'm saying to the minister, don't do it. The minister would actually say, what is the basis of this before they make that decision? Now, for us to be trying to write a law that simply says, first, for that decision to be made, there must be a committee convened and so on, would actually not make sense, because that is actually assumed. This is the authority. And again, as long as you're still operating within the paradigm of a committee, then you will have that concern, because that paradigm is the paradigm of a committee. But I still want to argue that all over the world, in the best of these agencies that we're talking about, this is what they exactly do. There is no difference. You don't have these committees that we're trying to establish in the South African context.
South Africa has product regulatory authority with competent staff, set up committees, etc. What's the problem?
The DG said that it's obvious that the CEO would only act on the advice of one of the committees, one of the relevant committees that has dealt with this.
It's a competent committee.
So why don't we say then, we can keep the wording from the Fruitful Act, that after the minister may, on the unanimous recommendations of a committee, why don't we say that then?
Problem, unanimous, which means there's no deadlock breaking mechanism.
Of the relevant committee?
Yeah. The principal act was wrong. Because by unanimous, it means you can actually create a logjam of decision making, unless you find another wedding. Honorable Kitebe.
Chair. Scientific thinking dictates that you either change the paradigm or even demolish it. So I think we have tried in that manner to try and persuade us to do so. But just on a sober note, Chair, if you look at page 58, and that's what we dealt with, that is now of the Word version of this, it's worth repeating. The bill establishes the authority as a juristic person. The CEO may very well be a natural person, but in this instance, the CEO acts then, or whatever, as a juristic person. Therefore, it's like, Deputy Chief Justice Moseneke with the Remuneration Board and so forth. We call it Moseneke Commission, but you see, that it's a juristic body, person, and we shouldn't give it the face of the Deputy Chief Justice, because he's not acting alone. That is when it comes to the question of remuneration. I'm drawing an analogy between that and this, because there's a temptation now to look at who's the minister currently, who's likely to be appointed CEO and stuff like that. And I think we must refrain from that. So we either change our paradigms or we demolish them. And I think Honorable Rabinovitz will then understand that the rules of natural justice, as the DG has said, will then be followed. And there's lots of countervailing voices in our society. I mean, the Constitution itself, the courts, and whatever else. So I don't think we should be that alarmed, really. I would like to appeal to members.
Thank you very much. Honorable Rabinovitz.
I would just like to second the proposal. You see, in the original act, it said the minister, with the unanimous approval of all members of the council present at the meeting, could exclude any of these medicines or documents. So if we're replacing something, not a board, not a council, not an executive committee, we say advisory committee, then let us at least just say that. The ministers may, following the recommendation of the unanimous opinion of the board, of the committee, sorry, the minister may, on the recommendation of the relevant committee, and then one assumes that it's unanimous approval of the committee, or at least a majority approval, because the committee is going to have its rules, isn't it? So at least if
come again, Honourable, I don't know this, we say the minister may, on the recommendation.
Following the on the recommendation of the committee,
of the authority,
the relevant committee. Yeah, the minister may, on the recommendation of the relevant committee, do all these exclusions. Then we're just having a mess.
But are you not making a very fundamental mistake here? Because these committees report and are subject to
the authority and advise the authority. Remember, that's what we dealt with on the earlier clauses. That's what we dealt with. Maybe let me use a shorter one. If you recall, we said the CEO shall appoint suitably qualified staff and may contract others. And then the last one, we said the CEO shall, subject to approval of the minister, appoint committees that may deem necessary to investigate and report to each the state authority on any manner within the purview of the authority it has of its act. Now we're taking this subset of the authority to override the authority and go to the minister. Are we not actually creating a problem in terms of the powers that were created here?
Chair, may I respond? Because the DG, in discussing this with us, said the CEO is not going to wake up one day and say, I want to exclude that medicine from the provisions of this Act. She's going to take advice from the relevant committee dealing with that class of medicine. So if we hear from the DG that that is the way it's going to work, it's not the authority on her own, then why don't we just write it in? The authority, or the minister, instead of taking advice from the authority, which is one person, will take that recommendation from the entire committee.
Members, I'm told there's tea outside. Can we take tea for 5 minutes, please? Then we'll come in. We will be... DG, you were going to be explaining something before we broke for tea?
Thank you very much, Chair. What I'm suggesting, Chair, is that it appears to me that members are addressing one concern by going to structure. Because the concern here is that the basis on which the CEO or at least the authority, as we see it, should make such advice to the minister must actually be a transparent basis and a sound basis based on expert advice. So rather than talk about committees, Chair, we should rather talk about qualifying that advice. And I'm trying to go back to where that clause is. Oh yes, it's one. On the recommendation of the authority by noting the exclude subject to such conditions as he or she may determine any product, medical device and may in like manner amend and withdraw any such notice. What you could actually add there, instead of talking about a committee and so on, would be to say that in making such a decision, the minister must ensure that the authority has based its advice on the best available expert knowledge or expert views or opinion, something like that. Because all you're trying to do is to ensure that advice that comes from the authority, it can be transparently scrutinized. And so you can put something to that effect that says, in determining or in deciding on the advice of the authority, the minister must ensure that such advice is based on some expert advice or knowledge that would then cover the concerns that I think are being made, rather than try and say subject to some committee unanimously agreeing or something.
Isn't it what you are saying? You see, the minister may, on the recommendation of the authority, if you put other layers, you must be aware that there can be consequential delays. Well, then you must source out further expert advice outside what is already given. What is no?
Within the authority, it just says on expert advice.
Of what?
Of whatever product you're dealing with, whatever you're dealing with.
But I'm saying that if you put that open-ended clause, you must also expect that expert advice outside the authority must be sourced. And the problem that to sort it, we do not know the time frames to sort it. And we end up with a problem, we're trying to sort, creating another problem of delays. And here we know that the expert advice exists in the authority, it has expert committees, they are already defined in the Act, that these are the committees that are there. Why do we want to complicate this thing outside what we have now?
Chair, I think, well, then, according to you, what you've just said, then why don't you say based on the expert advice of the committee?
No,
you
know, I'm saying that the committee's report to the authority takes a decision via the CEO. I'm saying that if you then take away all that loop and you put another expert advice outside the existing loop, you must actually expect that there may be delays. I'm warning you about the consequences of what we are proposing. Whereas here we've got an expert that we're having, it's a body, it's competent enough, it has competent support basis that can actually take these decisions. That's really the warning from the chair, if you want to take it away, but, and we're taking here experience as a best teacher. We've seen this experience previously. Honorable Duterte.
Chairperson, you know, I remarked earlier on that you are acting as if you are in Athens. You are very democratic, and I would say perhaps ultra-democratic at times, but it's fine, you know, so that you give everybody the space to express themselves. But I share your concerns in that the unintended consequences of this route that we are contemplating may be exactly that. I remarked earlier on that there are certain things that Honorable Waters is suggesting, and inadvertently, in trying to cure this condition, he may in fact only contribute to the sore festering. And I think he should perhaps think carefully about that. And we do not become that overzealous and insert this particular proviso that you know, they are suggesting we put in here, because people aren't going to be frivolous in dealing with matters that are of this serious nature. And I have said that I think throughout, I've been following carefully, we've got lots of countervailing voice within society. And I think there are many checks and balances in the bill itself. And so I would really urge my colleagues to perhaps, you know, agree that we take your advice, because that may really harm us in the end, because we may achieve the opposite of what we want to achieve.
So you support?
You, Chair.
Honorable Waters, I think I like that word, unintended consequences. Quite a forewarning, forearmed. I suggest that let's leave this authority. It has enough capacity within itself to actually make recommendations to the minister. And all the time frames are already defined in terms of the product of the work of the authority. We do something outside, we can actually create problems. I think the point here, Honourable Terry, is raising. I see the nodding. Thank you so much, Honourable Member. Now, notwithstanding one, the exclusion of any... Okay, we're done. We're done with this one. 42. Amendments of church, notwithstanding... Notwithstanding provision 35.2, the minister may, on the recommendation of the from time to time, by notice in the Gazette, amend schedule prescribed under 422A2 by the inclusion therein or by the deletion therefrom of any medicine or other substance in any other manner. Thank you. That's your page 36, 37A.
We said when we got to section 36, I hope I'm right. That we were going to discuss the warehouse issue. Do you remember?
No, yeah, that was your 36-2. But didn't we see, notwithstanding, one, the exclusion of any product from the operation of Section 22G shall be on the recommendation of the pricing committee. And then we said currently all those things don't actually, are not actually found now in the current provision of the bill we're dealing with.
We accept that, Chair.
Okay, thank you.
But what the Honourable Ravenovic said is members of Parliament, we can actually table to the Assembly a motion of sorts, I don't know the exact wording, where if we feel that another additional section other than that that's in the bill should be amended. They took the time to come down to Cape Town. They've been sitting here every day. I think them and the device people, the only people that have actually sat through this whole proceedings with us. And I do feel we owe it to them, Chair.
Honourable Kalia?
Yeah, just on that point, that I remember I raised it initially that 22G was not in the amended bill and we wouldn't comment on it. But the DG himself has now set a precedent by introducing today things that are not in the original amendment bill, and we looked at those things. So precedent has already been set. I just wanted to point that out.
Thank you. As I read this, it suggests that all this clause that's been added will achieve is that certain post sections, which could, for example, be the wholesalers, could be excluded from prices being set. And that's the complete opposite of what they've been asking for. So
come
to
again?
Me, this looks like a step backwards. They've been asking that if the entire chain of medicine distribution is regulated, then wholesalers should be regulated as well. This clause offers an exclusion, not an inclusion. They've been saying it's not fair to exclude one group from pricing regulation because everybody else is regulated. So therefore, the one group that's not regulated gets squeezed by all the incentives that people use to escape their regulation. So I don't see that this is helping. To me, this is stepping backwards. The DG.
Please,
DG, show me that I'm wrong. I'll be happy if I'm wrong. I'm just looking after the interests of all the people out there who have asked us to help them.
You will recall, I think, earlier, I don't know how many weeks ago now, you're using these two words, distribution and wholesaling, interchangeably. And we've been made wiser that they are not interchangeable. You remember? There's a distribution process and there are groups there. There's a wholesaling process, there are groups that side. Now, the question that, and then there were all sorts of discussions versus, what was this word used? Logistic fee capping and logistic fee fixing. Am I right? But are we not, do we want to put this here? I'm just trying to think how best to formulate this thing. I'm just trying to think. Did you want to help me? Oh, thank you very much, Dr. Pillay as well.
Yes, no, thank you very much, Chair. You see, Chair, I'm personally, and maybe my colleagues may assist. I'm not sure what we are trying to do, even in relation to that, because the Act says the Minister may, on recommendation of the Pricing Committee, make regulations on A, B, and C, which, and C says on an appropriate fee to be charged by wholesalers or distributors or any other person selling Schedule Zero medicines. Now, that's already there. Now, if there was a representation about what logistic fee and how it should be kept, et cetera, that should be in the process, then the relevant people may then approach the pricing committee to advise the minister otherwise. Now, I don't know what in the law must be changed. I'm still not sure what is being proposed, Chair, because the two must be read together. The exclusion, if they were suggesting that we want to be excluded, then they would ask the pricing committee to revoke number two. That's what we're just discussing.
which says, notwithstanding subsection 1, the exclusion of any product from the operation of 22G. That's what, if it was an exclusion issue, then they would go to the pricing committee to ask for two. If it was to ask for a particular logistic fee, then they'll go to the pricing committee to say, we would like this for these reasons, and then there'll be a scientific analysis. Now, the danger, Chair, is to actually take one group on this matter, which actually has an interest of so many groups, and try and satisfy this one group. Because then it would mean that this committee must call all other groups that have an interest on logistic fees to come and make their presentation so that the amendment can be accommodating. That's what I don't understand. What are we debating, really?
Dr. Pillay?
Chair, just to add from what Gigi said, there is a view that we have from the wholesalers.
Okay.
From the wholesalers, the NAPW.
Mm-hmm.
That I think Honorable Waters was talking about. But there's an opposing view from the distributors. So they have a different view. Now, they were not part of these discussions because this was never an issue that was needed to be amended. At the same time, we have manufacturers who engage in business activity with them, who have an interest in this matter. We have published a call for comment in order to make the necessary amendments to the fee as well as the definition. There is currently a definition in the regulations that governs this process. And it's a complicated process because one needs to assess what is the difference between these two, why do the two groups differ in terms of definitions, etc. And I think that the committee needs to go through, the pricing committee needs to go through that process. It's a technical process. And it will be very difficult for the committee now to do its work if it's going to have another definition, which is in the Act, and there's another definition in the regulation, and they're going to now contradict each other.
Honorable Mashiko.
Thank you, Chairperson. I do appreciate the fact that when we started, the Chairperson said, going through the hearings, and which is part of our duty, there are some issues which will strike us, and we'll see whether they might have an impact, because those people came to present and applying our own thinking, we might ask ourselves, is there any legislative gap in what these people are presenting? And what do we do about it? And by coming up with a definition, we are trying to address it for the benefit of the people who will be using, for whom the legislation is being amended, which are the ordinary people we left behind. And if the question of a logistics fee is something that has an impact, and if we feel that the 20 registered wholesalers who are actually people to whom the manufacturers must deal for our people to get these pharmaceutical products so that our people should benefit, and we have another group. I'm sorry, I'm basing it on what we have,
yes,
what was
right.
presented to us. Here are the 20 registered wholesalers who legally do what they're supposed to do. They stick to their fix to what the manufacturer, which is a one-way show from the manufacturer. He's dangling a carrot. He's saying this is what you must get. And we have the agency, which we don't know whether it's an agency or not, or what, which we got from the presenters. We don't know how this how these distributors operate. We don't know whether the fee is fixed or not. And at the end of the day, who benefits from this? Is it the people who are supposed to benefit from it? Is it the distributors, come pharmacists? Because that's what came out of the presentation. Are they the distributors or are they pharmacists at the same time? And how much do they pay for them to get the medicine to the rightful people? Such a thing should prick our minds, and we ask ourselves, what must we do? That's how it came to the table, and we are talking about it now. If something has to be done about it, and there's room for it, to be attended to, then I'll suggest that you attend to it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Winovitz.
Chair, I can offer up here amendments, which we will discuss in our next meeting, if you like, because I sense that there's a hurry to go through the process and finish it now.
What do you think?
I say I can offer you some amendments to consider, which will take this matter on board, which I thought had been...
What is the gist of what one of
these? There are amendments which will provide for a definition of wholesalers and for a way of fixing the logistical fee for wholesale distribution. And I will just table it and suggest that we discuss it at the next meeting and we don't make any decisions about this clause until people have had a chance to look at it. If that is, that might be a way forward.
Honourable Matthew, Mr.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I have one clarity on this logistic fee. I just want to find out from the department as to why are they leaving it loose for the, I don't know whether it's the manufacturers or the pharmacies, who are deciding on this logistic fee. Why can't we put a stamp decision on this? That must be regulated or it must be in the deal. Because at the end of the day, I agree with what the Honorable Martins said. At the end of the day, it's the patient down there who is suffering from it.
Thank you very much. We must come with a remit. I think the points raised by Honor Mashir and Matumisa are quite valid. It may, of course, be true, Dr. Pillay, that there's a view from wholesalers, and thus far as we were told here, there's an organized body of wholesalers, NAPWU. In fact, that's what we said on Section 36. I don't know about this, Peter, so I can't be authoritative there. If the distributing group is organized or whatever. So I don't have authority to speak there. If they've got an opposing view, I don't know about that. That's what you are telling us here. And of course, manufacturers will always have their own interest, because this is a vehicle they used for products to go down. And again, it's a pity that this particular presentation was not given to us. We were given a flip chart presentation, manufacturer, distributor, and then all those things that it was going actually going down there. And there's Honorable Maureen Matumisa says on Mashiko, firstly, there is a gap. That's what Honorable Mashiko is saying. Obviously, currently in the amendment bill here in front of us, there is a legislative gap to define this question of logistic fee. It's defined. There's a gap. We have amended most of the provision, save the pricing committee provision 22G. Maybe, and then Honorable Matumisa says, why is this left loose, and why can't we actually put a firm decision on the question of these logistic fees, you know? Now, and at the same time, and again, it's within our right, and in any bill, not only this bill, when we feel there's a new clause to be inserted or amended by us, we can make a motion and actually put a motion. It's within our rights. It's defined in the rules of parliament. That we can make it's within the rules of parliament that we can actually do that. So there's no fear there. But as I say, I mean, I've now seen a huge document from Dr. Rabinovitz, which can actually create a problem. Or alternatively, what was the DG saying here? Or alternatively, well, what is the thing? We can, of course, Dr. Pillay said it's a technical process of the pricing committee, but this technical process sounds severely flawed. They couldn't define between capping and fixing. For me, they should have actually understood that what is the logistic fee must be kept. It means it's 10 rand. Not above 10 rand, that's capping. Must be fixed, must be 10 rand. That's my understanding in a simple layman's term. Therefore, the alternate proposal that we can actually have, we may actually make a resolution of this committee that must go to the pricing committee to say we want this particular matter to be clarified and be well determined or provided for. And I don't have the formulation of that, so that there's a resolution. We don't necessarily put it in the bill here, but it's an appended resolution of this committee to say we think this matter in our own reading, and we've made a very wise reading of the bill. We think there is this particular gap Honorable Mashiach is talking about. We think there must be further consideration to addressing what we think are the, can now be the legislative gap, regulatory gaps in terms of the logistic fees and related areas of distribution and wholesaling. And then we give the mandate to them so that at some point when we call them as this pricing committee, they can actually tell us how this particular matter is raised. I'm just putting a view so that we avoid being scared away from what we're doing, members here.
You refresh on that. And all of that effort would be in an attempt to address what? Just so that, because I'm looking at what the document that Honorable Rabinovitz wanted to pass on to you, and it's got all these issues about the definition of the wholesaler, the price fees and stuff like that. So I just want to understand.
We have agreed on 22H, I think. We have agreed on 22H that will have A, B, and then we added C. That was going away the route of not defining the wholesaling. So we can't now come back. We said 22C will then actually define those areas dealing with such substances. So we can't go back to that particular aspect. But we've actually agreed to that one. But we can actually address, somebody said it's an implementation gap or something like that. I'll think about this gap. DG?
Chair, thank you for your guidance. If I may venture to make a suggestion, Chair, that perhaps instead the committee could actually call the pricing committee to a meeting where the pricing committee, together with the stakeholders concerned, address this issue, and then the committee may then take a resolution to direct the pricing committee accordingly. My worry is that we assume that there's a presentation from one group, it's possible that there is a gap in the implementation. But I think due processes would actually say, the Audi rule would say, let's allow for other people also to respond before we make our judgment on the matter. And I'm suggesting that rather than perhaps take a resolution to say there is a gap, please fix it, because then the committee may not know what it is trying to fix because it doesn't understand what the gap is. Why doesn't the committee call the pricing committee here to account on this matter and then call the relevant stakeholders to speak to the same issue, and then the committee can take a resolution that says we are now resolving that you shall go and amend A, B, and C. And then that would actually have had everybody had a say on that issue, because there are different interests on the matter. It is an interest issue, not only of the manufacturers, but also of the wholesalers themselves too.
Thank you very much. Yes, the same proposal.
Chair, I don't buy that because...
Oh, why?
No, because I have the concern that we're sitting for a very short period. Our meetings are focused very much at urgent legislation.
Sorry?
We're sitting for a very short period. Our meetings are focused at urgent legislation. The chances that we are going to sit with the pricing committee and with a group of people who debate this issue is small. And also, I think by now we do understand the issue. The manufacturers don't want this to be done because they want to be able to manipulate the price structure and get a cheaper deal through using distributors who benefit while the wholesalers, the licensed wholesalers, don't benefit. And it's in the interest of generics to have the wholesalers well licensed and well in the picture. So I don't think we need to be, you know, beguiled, perhaps the word is, that this will be dealt with later. It hasn't been dealt with, and I think if we don't deal with it, it's not going to be dealt with. That's my feeling. Because of the lateness of the day, we're coming to the end of the year. Who knows how many meetings we'll have next year. I don't see that it will be definitely done unless we make very, very clear and firm resolutions about it. This otherwise sounds like a much too long-winded process. I agree with the principle, but I think it will fall between the cracks.
Honorable Matu Mise?
Yes.
Honorable.
No, no,
thank you very much.
It is very clear. Well, the very thing that the distances are not clear, and the first time make a presentation for us, it's because they are very comfortable. Comfortable because they are dealing with the big giants, and they get what they get, anyway. And this poor old sailor, who are trying to satisfy the ordinary people there, that's why they're here. That's why we are listening to them. Even if we can call the friendly committee,
that distributor will be here, but most of them will come. Sure. I'm told the distributor sits not so comfortably in the chair somewhere in the room here.
We don't know. Can we? No. Can we make a proposal, members? We're almost done with the bill. It's 10 past 4. Honorable Matthew Mises' point. It's made in good faith, Honorable Matthew Mesa, and you are not wrong. It's made in good faith. There was no malafide in the manner in which you are raising a point, so there's no need to apologize. And you're particularly putting a particular trust to your argument. Members, I suggest that Honorable Ditebe and Honorable Rabinovich, it seems as if they've got a copy of a proposal they have to me, because maybe I'm saying that we can actually look at this, maybe find a way of drafting a special resolution of this committee, so that when we call them, because we have not called this special committee for a very long time anyway, at a particular point I remember we said let's call it, but we get overwhelmed by a number of other responsibilities that actually get settled on our shoulders here. So let's think, Honorable Rabinovich is going to draft a resolution, we'll table it maybe at some point to us as a committee as we deliberate here, and then we will actually take the process forward as a format for resolution, then we'll be able to move collectively together in terms of this particular issue. Thank you very much. We therefore go to 42. 42 amendments of the schedule. Notwithstanding the provision of 35(2), the minister may, on the recommendation of the authority, from time to time by notice in the Gazette, amend any schedule prescribed under section 22(a)(2) by the inclusion therein or by the deletion therefrom of any medicine or other substance or in any other manner. How's that? Great, thank you. Why don't you agree?
Because it's the same story. We're not saying the minister on the recommendation of the relevant committee and the authority. Let's just put the committee in. Because here we're saying the minister can change the schedule. She can take something that was Schedule 1 and put it Schedule 0. It may be variety.
Okay. No, we have agreed on that one. Transitional mechanisms. Or what is it called? Transitional measures. Medicines and medical devices that are registered at the date of commencement of this Act shall be deemed to be registered in terms of this principal Act, and the CO shall enter them in the relevant register. The MCC shall cease to exist the day before this Act is brought into operation. Anything done by the Council which could have been done by the authority in terms of this act shall be deemed to have been done by the authority. Members, here you will recall that PIASA, FAMISA, NAPM, IMSA, CAPRISA all made comments about this particular provision. What was it? Marketing? It was the word they used as part of this particular transitional mechanism. You remember? Hmm? Yes. There was that section, some of them were raising marketing code of practice, am I right? Remember that section, marketing code of medicine, and the DG even suggested thereon that there be a grandfather clause. And Dr. Pillay was saying code dealing with perversity is difficult, and then that was defeated by the proposals. Remember earlier on when we were dealing with the public hearings. So it means, what are we saying on this one? DJ didn't draft this grandfather clause.
Just to notice that we must do away with the certified part. I'm sure you
yeah.
didn't read it, but
it's registered in terms of this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marketing code of.
I think this issue was the marketing code part was dealt with earlier and addressed. I think
where? Which section maybe?
I think there was a section when that was dealt with.
Okay.
Yes, but this one is more about the transitional arrangement.
Thank you very much. And if you can just alert the chairperson, Honorable Ramasalo. Oh, yes. Sorry, what do I call you? Mr. Silo Ramasalo.
Now we'll find it just now. I think it's on page 25, 18C.
Page 25,
18C, if I'm not mistaken.
Page 25, 18. The minister, after consultation in the embassy, may make regulations to the
sure.
marketing of product device, and such regulation may also provide for code of practice for relevant industries. Oh, thank you very much.
Yes,
that's members that will remember.
Yeah. And then?
This
one is about...
No. There was still something raised there. And even somebody even commented then to say regulation will be published by Friday when we're dealing with this provision.
Not 43.
That's for complementary medicine.
Oh, complementary medicine. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yes, you're right here. Yeah. Now, short title and commencement. This act is called the Medicines and Related Substance Act 208 and comes into operation. Oh, I'm so sorry, madam. Ah, my sincere apologies.
My concern is, when I read it, the medicine control plasma has ceased to exist a day before this expert is working to open. Now, I want to know, where is the head over going? At what stage is the head over being be done? So that when the new authority comes into power, they must know exactly what is happening there, because there will be some policy decisions that have been taken, there will be meetings that have been taken, and for them to run the office smoothly, there must be some kind of...
That will be your three. That will be your three. Mm-hmm. Honorable Tshebe.
Chair,
I didn't see you because there's a black computer in front of me and you're sitting that other side is blocking my vision. My sincere apologies.
Well, I understand, you know, my mother has really been involved in the struggle a long time now. It's not like the previous PEC handing over to the next PEC. There's the law of perpetual succession in place.
Thank you very much, DC.
Now, Chair, I think on two, we must assure Honourable Madomisa that, in fact, just to say, Chair, between the state law advisors and ourselves, there was a very huge debate about this matter, which Honourable Madomisa is raising. But in the end, we came to the conclusion that, in any case, there's nothing stopping all these appointments that are supposed to be there for the authority being made and put in place so that everything is in place such that by the time the president says Now I'm proclaiming that this act is now operational. That authority is already there, and therefore has been doing all those handovers and so on and so on and so on. So there are ways of dealing with it, and has happened in the past. You see, like if you look at SAFA and the gradual relationship between the existing and the old. So there can be sections here which, for example, we can say, can we ensure that the appointment of the CEO is already something proclaimed, so that the CEO can appoint everything else but suspend the activity such that the other thing continues. That can be done. Then once you've had all the appointments and the processes have taken place and the authority is ready, you can say then proclaim the rest of the act, which would make it on the day on which it is actually in operation, the other one has ceased to exist. And that handover would have been done, which also says what the Honorable Dutebo was saying about the law of succession.
Thank you very much, members. It's now 20 past. Do we finish what time? 6 o'clock? Or we're almost, we finish now. We're going to just come back now in terms of adoption of each of the clauses and discussing those areas that may need further discussion. Guy to the chair, when do we meet again? Members are tired. When do we meet again?
Tomorrow.
Yeah. There's a proposal for tomorrow. It's done. It's done. It's comprehensive. Yeah. State law advisor, maybe she needs time for do PDF.
Thank you, Chair. I'm taking the members referring to today's amendment. We can do that. We can accommodate today's amendment, but the amendments were discussed previously and agreed on already in the thick document. They may have noted. So today we're going to add whatever is decided as we instructed by the committee and send the document to the printers for the PDF. No, they print overnight, so we can incorporate. I don't know what are the logistical arrangements with the department, traveling and everything.
We meet. Maybe Honorable Waters' point is right, because but we still need to deal with the bill, complete it, and then maybe the printing. But you are right, maybe let's deal with the PDF printed document there so that we actually can guide ourselves. When can we meet again? Tuesday next week. By then, all things have been... What question?
The question is what the status of that appeal committee is, because that is tantamount to a two-tier process which we were working on removing.
That is subject to discussion.
So why print the final version of the bill for amendment until we sort that out? Why don't we spend 15 minutes now looking at that so that we've got some idea of how we want to go in the printing of that section of the bill? That is crucial. That discussion is crucial.
That
it may take us 15 minutes.
That's 15-3 of yours and the other voters.
Yeah.
Sorry?
It's that one.
And then, which other one?
But Chair, I think you made the point as well. We don't want a two-tier system.
We're done with that one.
No, we haven't, because this committee that can take complaints is now a three-tier system. It's actually a three-tier system. It makes it...
So you suggest we deal with 15-3?
You raised this morning.
Yes. So I'm saying that, are you suggesting we deal with that one and then take it to the printer?
That may seem fairly straightforward, but the state law advisor isn't here, only the legal person from the department. She's back. Now, I think, was it in 2001 when the PFMA was amended? I just want to find out whether, you know, it's proper to refer to the PFMA as properly, of course, enacted in 1999, but to the extent that it subsequently was amended, why not add something about it having been amended, as amended, for example? Or is that not how it's supposed to be?
Now
if you look at 58 under summary, memo on the object of the bill, it says that the authority is subject to the PFMA.
Steve, what do you respond to that one? One mic is on.
Sorry.
Yeah? One mic is on. No, I understand the
concern.
The proposal and the concern, but it's not a major issue. It can be done in that way.
Honorable, what you miss?
On the finalization of this bill. My suggestion is that we are all here now. Why can't we continue instead of coming back next week? Because some of us have got the commitment for the week. And that other week is the people's parliament in Mpumalanga. Everybody must be there. So how about sacrificing tonight or tomorrow so that we can finish and then debate this? Bring it up for debate on the 23rd.
Members, what if we meet tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock, and complete the bill?
Yes.
Agreed. Thank you very much. Well, let's wait for the state law advisor first. How do you know? Oh, Yoga's even says that she anticipated this discussion. And we already have a venue for tomorrow. So we're well organized. This is powerful, always. Yeah, does it?
M201.
M201. Max Building. Tomorrow, members, 10 o'clock, M201, we complete the bill. Thank you very much, State Advisor. They've committed you that you are available tomorrow in your absence. Oh, you understand. Yeah.